Good evening. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Thank you all for coming on this hot, sweltery evening. And thank you, Jimmy and Joan, for running this series and for inviting me. I am going to read from my new book, which you can purchase if you want to afterwards. The book is an elegy for my mother and my twin brother. They died within 2 years of each other. My mother died of brain cancer. My twin brother died of alcoholism. He was in the grip of the disease most of his adult life, and he died at 54. The book is really one long poem made up of a lot of parts in sequence. And the parts don't have titles, so I'm just going to read straight through, and I'll pause between the parts. And I'll warn you when I get to the last poem, so you'll get ready to clap. All right. I think there's only one poem where you might need to know something about the context. It's set in an office. I worked for many years as a child and family therapist. And I did a lot of play therapy, so that's why there are all those toys in that office. All right. At 30,000 feet, two moons compete in the window view. One, a high August chrysanthemum. The other, its wavering orange reflection on the long sack of Lake Michigan. Again, I will arrive uninvited to visit my drunken brother. Brother, from the Greek frater, as in fraternity, as in fratricide. Always he swims away from me, always kicking away. I was the dark moon curled against him in the first sky of the first night. Curled crescent, I was the always other. How annoying, another self, shadowing the barely self. Brother, as in brotherhood, next door to brothel, old English neighbor of Huehotan, which means to waste away, to go to ruin. I mean to intrude. The 737 slides its shadow across the calm evening lake and drones down to mild, clear Milwaukee. He was the expected, hoped-for one. It was 1942, before sonograms. Sometimes the two hearts beat together. Halved and huge, a cut blood orange. Against the navy blue sky, the harvest moon rose bruised, crosshatched, flecked with starlings, swirling down to roost on the wire veins of the city. The earth and moon love each other only once a year this way. Your life, your only life. It was the moment I knew your life was emptying from you. Stub-tailed, speckled, ecstatic, the starling sang the world's beautiful song. I stood in the parking lot and wept. Wept that you lay 600 miles away. Wept that you could neither hear nor see the evening's old orange opera and that you could no longer want to. Nothing was garnered, gathered in, and nothing was stored by. They said you bled from every pore, and nothing could stanch it. I was at the clinic between patients when the receptionist buzzed me, and I went to the waiting room and got my husband just as if he were one of the children, and we walked back to my office, and I closed the door, and I said, "He's gone, isn't he?" And my husband nodded and kissed me, and I said, "He's lost his life. He's lost his life." and sat down on the little orange chair by the game shelf and the art shelf and the people shelf of soldiers and a clown and cowboys and a ballerina and a bride and groom and a baseball team by the sturdy wooden dollhouse where babies have been eaten by starving dinosaurs and stupid, mean grown-ups have jumped out windows into a deep lake of poop. And a giant tornado has come and sucked out a whole family and every stick of sturdy wooden furniture, and it's all fallen on top of them in a big pile on the floor. Our mother's house. In the dream, someone, a noise at the door. Huge, snarling Great Dane rearing up, mouth open. I slam the door. No, it's going around to the backyard where the new puppy is playing under the blooming lilacs. It has the puppy, snapping its neck again and again. Then the puppy is asleep on the summer lawn. I grab him. I'm almost to the back door. The Dane is charging up the steps. I grab the hose, turn it on, fill the great mouth, its deep gullet in rage. It vomits, lunges for us. I see the dark, ridged, pink roof of its mouth. I wake up. Again, you are dead. We didn't look alike. Breech babies. Two perfectly round little heads, our mother said, though I outweighed him by a pound, which worried her. She believed only girls should be frail. Her firstborn, both colicky, he wasn't gaining. The doctor gave him B12 shots, the needle so long when it plunged into his small bottom, she could hardly bear it. When he died at 54, she said, "Now my tiniest baby is gone." Only sometimes dressed alike, blue sailor suit and sailor dress, the first day of kindergarten. I was the frail one then. "Aren't they darling?" the teachers mewed. One put her thumb and index finger around my wrist. "So thin, but she's the smart one." Another smiled. "Yes, but he's the handsome one." We didn't look alike except our eyes. The same hazel green eyes. When he appeared in the vision, come back from eternal blackness, in the same piss-soaked bathrobe, the same soft clapping slippers, stuffed with his swollen, mottled ankles, ice cubes still rattling in his glass, his face the same yellow bruise, I looked into his eyes. They were tear-filled, pleading. They were my eyes. Her family needing her $5 a week earnings after the eighth grade, she was put out to work as a hired girl. Ever after, she considered herself ignorant, uneducated, especially before anyone with a college degree. Nevertheless, she called for an appointment, dressed up, drove into downtown Milwaukee. Sometimes love risks its worst fear. Was it her fault? Was it because she held him back in second grade? And sometimes mercy doesn't need to temper truth. No, not from one single thing. Not your fault. No one's fault. In her desk, a catch of clippings, mostly my school awards. Among the mementos, one homemade Mother's Day card from him. Lightly penciled, tentative cover, drawing of a leafless gray tree, inside the excruciating message, "From your retarded one." Banker one, still can't balance a checkbook one. Beautiful wavy-haired one, your grandmother's miserable hair one. Sturdy, never sick one. Asthma, eczema, earache, high fever, bleeder, always got something one. Good sleeper one. bedwetter. Pellet gun pigeon squirrel hunter one, stray runt of the litter reject rescuer one, lots of friends one, loner. Sharp dresser, has girlfriends, goes to the prom, knows better than to argue with adults one. Little commie pinko, reads too many books for her own good one. Never left town or us one. Lever. David, named for your grandfather one. Diane sounds good with David one. Firstborn male child, female. Heart's pride, problem. One who drank, one who didn't, one who died, one who should have. Thank you. Shack of hair and bone, where will I find you now? DNA would say you are still you, as a place is still a place, even abandoned into ghost town. Shall I say the soul leaves behind the body's company house? Say sorrow makes a nightly round, rattles the doors, says no one ever really believes the gold will give out. And how long you've already been gone. Inside of her, I could not tell where he, one soft side, left off, and I, the other half, began. Curled back to back, we made a butterfly. There was never a picture of it. With her body, she grew that picture inside each of us. After she found him where he had fallen, and after he died, she taped the first photo by the phone, a hospital snapshot of her propped up, young face, tentative, smiling, a sleeping full moon on each winged arm. Long ago, she wrote my name with an arrow to one dark-haired circle, his name on a thin line to the other. Now, she hasn't taped it well. Again, it's fallen to the kitchen floor. She's not smiling at either of us in the snapshot. She's smiling straight ahead, saying, look, this one is you. This one is your brother. And the last poem, which is actually an epilogue and also a letter poem, has an epigraph from Brenda Hillman. Why do you think you were called to this world? You were called to be loved. You were called when you weren't here, Brenda Hillman. David, it's 2012, a rare gift of November generosity, 65 degrees in New York City. With a bunch of other tourists, I'm sitting in Friday evening twilight on the steps to the Metropolitan. It's our birthday. We're 70. Down front on the sidewalk, a lone saxophonist, lost in his solo song to the city, raises his riff up over the taxis in a deep ribbon of sweetness that floats high above the avenue, reaching all the way to Times Square. Throng swirling, light everywhere, buskers flip and somersault in the street. Minnie and Mickey mingle, working the crowd. The Cat in the Hat ambles by. On a traffic island, a guy in cowboy boots and his underpants sings and plays his guitar. Two statues of liberty, one in a rainbow bikini, lifts her rainbow-lighted torch. The other, silver spray-painted head to toe, sits on a curb eating a corn dog. David, we've elected a black president twice. And since you've been gone, everyone has their own computer, and look, we all have these little portable phones. You can call anyone from anywhere. Nearly dark now. Come with me into the great museum. We'll go past the complicated first floor armor, past the second floor Andy Warhol retrospective, soup cans, Marilyn's, and Jackie's, past the third floor Buddhism and the Silk Road special exhibit, Peace and a Thousand Bodhisattvas. Here, before this single lighted case, we'll stop for Han Dynasty funerary miniatures, Fisher-Price toys from the 3rd century, little moss green ceramic models of everything needed. I would send them all with you. I would gather the small pen with 6 rams, the one with 4 sleek geese, the one with 3 stout pigs. I would give you the granary, the sturdy outdoor oven, the many-storied watchtower, give you the family house and its courtyard, the well and its fragile bucket. Thank you.